Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
From Postcard from the Past and Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is the podcast where we take on giant good luck cats, one-eared donkeys, and unfeasibly blue skies as we attempt to understand the memories, meanings, and stories held by picture postcards. I'm Tom Jackson, and today I'm delighted to say my guests are writer Adam Scovell and comedian Jake Yap. Jake and Adam, welcome.
Thanks.
Hello.
Great to be here.
Adam Scovell is a writer and filmmaker whose writing you may have spotted in The Times, the BFI, Sight and Sound, and The Quietus. He set up the website Celluloid Wicker Man, and that revived and popular genre folk horror is an enduring interest to him. And he wrote, as well as his novel Mothlight, which has certainly something of the folk horror about it, the book itself, Folk Horror, Hours Dreadful and Things Strange, which could be the subtitle of this podcast. And Adam comes to us with a CH44 postmark, Wallasey on the Wirral.
Indeed.
Adam, do you still send postcards?
I do, actually. I'm in a long-distance relationship, and sometimes it can break the monotony of digital communication to send one. I actually sent one last week from Paris to Strasbourg, where my partner lives, and she sometimes sends me postcards to Strasbourg just to, as I say, break up the Facebook Messenger chats and
things. How romantic.
Yes, I suppose it is, really.
Did you travel to Paris specially to send it?
Or? No, I was in Paris to photograph of Jacques Tati, his statue, I mean, not the actual Jacques Tati. I went to Joinville where he filmed his film Mon Oncle.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
I had to photograph the wall, which features at the opening of the film,
yes,
and the statue of him in character in the Monsieur Lou character just around the corner from there. But I picked up a postcard of Claude Monet's Lilies and posted it along to my partner all the same.
Very good. Well, I'm glad to hear it. Jake Yap is an increasingly ubiquitous voice on the media. Whether he's squeezing radio networks into 4 minutes, causing outrage as his alter ego Dora Dale, sharing a bath with John Holmes, gutting the media itself on his Radio 4 show Jake Yap's Media Circus, or crafting and hosting his own neurotic clip show Hurting on Dave. You can't move for a bit of Jake Yap these days, and of course that is a very good thing. Now, Jake comes to us today with a Catford SE6 postmark.
Oh yes, born and bred, very proud of it.
And when did you last send a postcard, Jake?
Oh, that's a good question. I always buy far more than I send. The ratio is hopeless. It's probably about 100-to-1 ratio of purchases to actually getting it together to send.
That doesn't have to be a bad thing. That's still an acquisition of nice postcards.
True. I do. I have got a nice back catalogue. What I want to do, I've done a tiny, tiny bit of, but I want to do more is send postcards to my little boy, because I now live in Bedford. So when I'm in London, it sort of feels like it would be fun to send him a postcard from, you know, wherever I'm working. But the trouble is that all the London postcards are just all horrible. Like, they're just all terrible postcards. You can't buy a classy postcard of London anymore.
Well, perhaps you could go to a museum.
Yeah, sure. I could read a book or something. I mean, no offence, you know. Sure.
I shouldn't be trying to solve problems for you.
No, please do. I've got plenty of time.
I think that's a lovely idea, because then, yeah, he would get lots of nice postcards.
He loves getting post.
Which is, how old is he?
He's just about to turn 6.
Well, post is a good thing, then. Yeah,
yeah, he's actually put a post box on his bedroom door. It's a lantern from IKEA, and he sort of looks at it sometimes quite pointedly in the morning and says, I haven't had any post today. I'm like, okay, sorry. So he's mastered passive aggression.
He knows about your plan.
Yeah.
You just need to make it happen. Well, I think that's a great idea. It's really, really to be encouraged. Before we discover the cards that Jake and Adam have brought along, I'll give you a quick card of mine. This is, of course, a postcard from the past card, like I do on Twitter, at past postcard, an old card from which I've selected just a part of the message. So this first one is a card of St. Mary's Church, Wedmore. Yeah. I don't think I can really tell you where Wedmore is because I don't know. The postmark is...
illegible.
Yes, illegible. Possibly Bristol, but possibly not. But the message, it's very blue sky on that one.
That's your classic.
And very poorly put together postcard, it has to be said. It just looks all wrong to me.
Yes, there's a bench, some totally banal trees.
Yes, yeah, random tree. These are like trees, perhaps from one of your found images, actually, Adam.
Yes.
Anyway, this was sent in 1984, and it was sent to Weston-super-Mare by some people. And the message that appealed to me, just the way it was written, really, it said, tonight is the disco, so we have to put makeup on, then take it off.
Okay.
And I'm sure that's true.
I mean, that you could just do that and cut out the middleman.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, in a way, maybe, look, you can squeeze a Radio 4 into 4 minutes.
Yes.
That's a night out squeezed into one sentence without the fun bit in between.
I mean, if it's a good night, you might not even get as far as part two of that.
Yeah, I think they're pretty young, actually. Helen and Pauline, the writing is fairly young.
Oh.
So I think that's why putting the makeup on was a big deal, because they felt they were having fun doing it, I think, because they were young. They were young. I'll do one more quickly. This is a solitary pony in the Brecon Beacons.
It's a very lonely pony.
Yeah. Rather sort of forlorn look. And
well, you can't see is behind the camera. There's like a whole fleet of them pointing and jeering. Go on in, eat some grass for the camera. That's not my Welsh accent, by the way.
1972.
Wow.
Lovely card. I had these British Explorers cards. Really nice.
I think I had that stamp.
Yeah, there was a set of them, different Explorers. I remember Frobisher. Anyway, that was Ross. Now, this card, again, it's a young person. I don't know how young, but they are not holding back on the way they're expressing themselves. You'll see. They say, eyeing up the local crumpet.
Oh.
Wish you were here. Bouncy, bouncy.
Crikey. I mean, that could be very young. And they could literally be talking about crumpets, which are amazing.
Yes, it's probably someone with an interest in baked goods.
Yeah, and maybe there's a trampoline at the holiday park.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Well, that was what...
I quite like the defiant exclamation mark after the England as well.
Yeah, very. That's going to be obligatory in a few months' time.
England. What? England. Wow.
Yeah, do you remember when people used to write England, then the Earth,
universe? Space. Yeah. Those were the days. Molesworth was famous for those.
Yes, but I think lots of kids did it.
Oh, yeah. I once sent a postcard, and it was to a friend of mine who had just relocated and was working in Macclesfield.
Right.
And I sent a postcard, and I didn't know her address, and I didn't know where she was working. But I put all the key information that I knew in the address box, and I said, it's a publishing company. It's on an industrial estate outside Macclesfield. I think it's across two fields, and I think there's like a KFC nearby or something. And if you get this postcard, then you owe all the postal workers a drink, all of them. And she got it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a good test. You could do that regularly.
Yeah.
But I've heard of that happening in like a little Irish village or something.
Yeah.
Where there aren't many people around and everyone knows each other. But Macclesfield.
Yeah. I think it's impressive. Just a fun chat. It broke up the monotony.
Yeah. I've often thought we should really get a postman in here, because people say, do they read the messages? And my theory is they don't have time. But I'd like to know. I don't know. Other than getting two postmen in here next week, I will never know.
I had the weirdest thing the other day. I was... I'm sorry for oversharing. I was on the loo and the doorbell rang and I just couldn't really get to it. And then I could hear footsteps kind of like round the back of my house. I was thinking, oh, am I about to be burgled like while I'm on the loo? So I kind of finished as abruptly as I could and ran downstairs and sort of opened the door and said, I'm here. I didn't say I'm armed, but I sort of wanted, but it was the postman trying to deliver a parcel. And he said, oh, what was you doing? And I was like, well, I was on the loo. And he was like, oh, right. And then he said, and like, this never happens. Like, I am not famous. Like, he went, has anyone told you look like Jake Yap? And I was like, I am Jake Yap. And he looked at me and the only thing he said was, what are you doing living here? I was like, I've been on TV like four times. You don't get £1 million a go. Like, it doesn't work like that.
A house of pop.
Yeah.
But presumably he had the parcel with your name in it.
No,
isn't that
a
clue?
Okay.
So he genuinely was.
Yeah, but he insisted on shaking my hand and it wasn't washed. I'm sorry. It's horrendous.
Yeah, but well, there's a sting in the tail. I'm Jake Yap, and I haven't washed my hands.
It's washed now, okay?
I hope he's not listening.
That was the other Jake Yap, don't worry about it. Well, to let you know at home, images of all the cards that we discussed today are on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can see that we're not making this up. Now, Jake and Adam, you've both been kind enough to come onto the studio today with postcards of your own. Let's start with you, Adam, your first card. What have you got?
Well, I've got a card here which actually was given to me only a couple of years ago, and it hasn't been sent, so there's nothing interesting particularly on the back. It was given to me by an ex as a birthday present, but it's more of what it is, which I find interesting. It just looks like a piece of wood on a beach covered in snow, but it's actually a very particular piece of wood and a very particular
beach. This is a black and white photographic image.
Yeah, so it's quite an atmospheric image. In the background, there's some hint of buildings. It's actually Dungeness, and this is part of Derek Jarman's garden at Prospect Cottage, and you can see the nuclear power station in the background. And it was brought to me by an ex-partner, and she brought it to me because I was obsessed with Jarman's work at the time. But actually, that landscape in general is a very evocative place, and even though I've never been there,
have you not been to Dungeness?
No, I've not been there, and it's almost partly deliberate because it feels like a very much a sort of fantastical imagined place, and I like to keep it that way at the moment. I will probably visit at some point because I've written about his work a lot.
Don't visit.
No. Is it not that good? Maybe it's just my romanticism with it, but the thing is, it ties back to lots of different things. It ties back to Jarman's work, yes. It ties back to learning about cinema in a new way in my undergrad year in, 2012, when I got the card. It was a real pivotal moment for me, and I wouldn't be doing what I do now without that year. So that kind of represents that. And also it represents my childhood, because I remember Dungeness was a landscape I became really unusually obsessed with because of an even more strange thing, in that I was obsessive of watching old Doctor Who episodes when I was young.
Right.
And there's an episode called The Claws of Axos, which is a John Pertwee story. And it's filmed in Dungeness.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And even more aptly for this postcard, because it's in a time when the beach had snow on it. While they were filming The Claws of Axos, there was a snowstorm, and they put it into the story because it was a massive continuity error, and they had to put in a line, or this spaceship which has landed has actually caused a snowstorm.
Was it space snow?
They didn't really go into detail. Right. It was just like a throwaway line.
Time snow.
It's not space, it's time.
But the point was is that it was a landscape which actually really excited me when I was young. And often when we're dealing with media in childhood, we're looking at very picturesque landscapes a lot of the time, places which are very heavily edited, and all of a sudden we're watching something which is a very odd place by any account. And there's a nuclear power station, which is also part of the story. There's a shingle beach where this parasitic spaceship has embedded itself into the Earth, where it's going to suck the Earth's powers out. There's all these things. And it all connects to this one image that was brought to me by chance. So that postcard actually is the only one that's travelled with me through virtually all of my flats that I can recall, because I usually put postcards around my rooms.
Well, despite what Jake says, I think you should go to Dungeness. It is a very evocative, nice place.
I think you should go, like, in November. or when it is bleak and wintry and you feel that desolation. Because you're right, it does have that.
It's quite unique, actually, that atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally recant my...
I will do. It's just the worry that going there I might be disappointed if there's no alien, spaceship. Yeah, yeah.
Tell me when you're going, okay? I'll go to the costume shop.
Just don't drive there. Get the train. The Romney Highland Dimchurch Railway.
Oh, right.
The miniature train. But, I could tell you stories about Dungeness, but I won't.
Oh, go on.
Well, I remember we had relatives who lived nearby, and my great uncle was from that area, and he knew people who, I think, just after the war, had lived in the old railway carriages there. There's still bits of those old railway carriages around. But literally old train carriages that were sort of dumped there, and he knew people who lived in them. So we used to go down as kids in the summer. And in summer evenings, it had a very strange feeling. Obviously, you've got the power station humming away, pretty massive. And I remember in twilight, you'd see hundreds, possibly thousands, of rabbits running across this shingle, this strange shingle through the kind of gorsy, not very green foliage. And they were otherworldly, I tell you. They're probably affected by the power station.
It sounds like a cross between Fred's and Watership Down.
There you go. Pitch it tomorrow.
I will. I'll get to the Beeb and pitch it.
That's your next book. Very good. Well, thank you for sharing Derek Jarman's, what do you call that? Tumulus.
Well, I suppose on the back it's called a sculpture, but I mean it's a piece of driftwood that he's sort of stabbed into the beach. But I mean, it's very evocative and very nice.
Very good. So, Jake, what's the first card you've got for us?
Mine is so banal by comparison. So, this is from Cheltenham. It's the Promenade in Cheltenham, a place that I used to frequent a lot when I was a child. I'd go with my father on the train to see my grandmother who lived there. And we would spend these interminable Saturdays with her. I mean, you know how you can have an object like this postcard, which was written to me and sent to me by my grandmother, and you know, it maybe has a certain amount of meaning at the time, and then as time progresses, and you know, my grandmother is long gone, it has a different amount of meaning. And what's perhaps surprising is that it's far less meaning now. That's so harsh. But she was a complex character. I think it would probably be fair to say a narcissist. So she liked the world to revolve around her, and she enjoyed the notoriety of. She had quite a good life. So my grandfather was he was the chairman of Vickers. Wow. And he sort of inherited that from his father. And they were there during the war, and they had rather a good war.
I bet they did.
They did pretty well, actually. Made a few bombs, made a few pounds, and they had a great time. I mean, there's all kinds of rumours about my grandmother and her father-in-law. My great-grandfather,
right,
Sir Charles, who, the theory is that it's conceivable that my father and my grandfather were actually brothers. Is that right? Anyway,
goodness,
I think you know
me.
What I'm saying.
Well,
so,
you're happy to share this?
Yeah, I don't care. It sort of sends me back to that time of what I enjoyed was sitting on the train with my dad and just kind of going on these trips. And it was
so the venture, the excitement.
It was a thing
going
I could do. Yeah, I remember I was like sort of 7, 8 years old and traveling. My mother wouldn't go because she just didn't want to know. But it was a really nice kind of companionable thing to do. And then going and seeing this woman who was just very manipulative and joyless. What's interesting in this postcard, it sort of says it all. I don't understand any of it. It says, congrats on your swimming do, which I think was my birthday party. I had a swimming pool party. I don't know why she's saying congratulations, because it's not something I didn't achieve a birthday party. And then she says, I think you were very clever. I didn't book it. Like, I was 10.
You put on a good spread.
Yeah. Well done. It went so well. And then she says, I will reward you when you come down to Cheltenham.
Oh, that's a strange phrase.
Right? And she was very generous. She liked to kind of splash the cash until it all ran out. I mean, she sort of just spent all the money. Wow. It just all went. But I remember it was worth going because she'd give you like 10 or even 20 pounds and say, go down to the shops. Yeah. And in those days, you could buy 4 helicopters, actual Chinooks. No, but so that was quite enticing.
Yeah, yeah.
That
in fact, to tease a child with a promise like that, is quite powerful.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you put that away, don't you? You file that as a child.
Yeah, she knew what she was doing. And then she talks about my cousin and chasing the bus that he had to catch and stuff. And she says, "Talk about super gran." I was like, "Oh, there's your narcissism." So that was her. She was a remarkable woman, and it was there in Cheltenham that I sort of met and spent time with my great aunt, her sister, who was great aunt Ruby, who had a very specific voice. It's a very weak voice. She was a lovely, lovely woman. She was very strong. She at 92, I think, went to Egypt and was annoyed she couldn't go on a hot air balloon, but she did ride a camel. And she another time she stood on a stool in her kitchen and fell off it. This was like 92, 93, and fell off it and smashed her head against the oven door and broke the oven door, but she was fine. But she has a very weak voice, which was difficult because she was kind of unintelligible. I mean, it's harsh, but you always wanted to engage, and so she'd sort of grab your arm and say, and be like, yes, and she'd be terrible. And terrible. But discovering I could do that voice and do it well, though I say so myself, I actually fooled my cousin. On the phone, I rang him
joking.
Up, and I
so she was the manipulative one. You're saying?
No, she was very sweet. She was the sister of my grandmother, but that voice, which I was just obsessed with, and I used to phone LBC.
Did you?
As Ruby in Catford, and that turned into a character called Dora Dale, and that was the origin of "Pleased to Meet You," which I
so you for extra. You owe them a debt.
I do, yeah, I do. Well, I certainly owe her a debt. She was, I don't know, my grandmother or anything.
I've been talking about this in another program. It's funny how, if you look back farsightedly, how much of what you end up doing has seeds so far back in your childhood. And you know, that can be a kind of dreadful Freudian thing, or it can just be, oh, yes, that makes sense. That piece of the jigsaw started then.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it?
I think that when you consider that for a lot of people, your kind of single person life is probably somewhere between 10 and 20 years maximum. But all of the rest of your life, chances are you're probably going to be part of a kind of family unit. And so you're right. You know, what happens in your childhood, you probably see repeated once, if you become a parent, and so it does, it resonates, all of that experience.
I suppose there's that thing as, you know, stuff that you do as a kid that you really, really like. Well, you won't bring it all into adult life. You probably won't become a plasticine modeller or a...
Well, I've tried. I've tried to drag as much as possible, to be honest.
But there's a sense that you kind of put it away for a bit because it becomes the wrong thing to do when you're, I don't know, a student and then a young adult. And then that one day you sort of hit, young adulthood proper, and you sort of think, well, why can't I do this? And and then I think you either pick it up again or you think, no, actually, I really have gone beyond that. You know, the plasticine is going to have to go back in the box.
It's the Sherman Brothers, who such brilliant songwriters. They did the Jungle Book and Mary Poppins and everything. But in Bedknobs and Broomsticks, they describe that period, I would say from sort of 11 to maybe 20. They sing a song called It's the Age of Not Believing. And I think it's such a brilliant distillation of that.
Very good. Well, you could say this is where the creativity comes from. Is kind of you look back at that stuff, and when you were acting in a kind of unedited way as well, you didn't have that thing telling you not to do stuff. Very good. Very complex emotions resonating from that bit of cardboard from Cheltenham.
Pretty basic.
Well, I don't know. It's very interesting. I'll do one more quickly one from me. This is a piece of graphic design to die for.
That's incredible. That was done without Photoshop.
Yes. A lot of red, and then a font a bit like the Goodies or something of Boscastle, and four jauntily angled images from this multi-view. And actually, I'm very fond of this card. This is from 1987, I think. 13p, sent to the West Midlands, Coventry, and, you know, paints a picture. Have managed to get the chairs out for a little sun worship. My chair collapsed with me on it. So, slapstick on a postcard.
The sun gods are angry.
I'm vaguely a cult.
Yes.
Yeah. Worshipping the sun there in the 80s.
Yeah. Boscastle.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Podcasts from the Past, the Postcard Podcast, and my guests today are writer Adam Scoville and comedian Jake Yap. Adam, what's the second card you have for us today? Something a bit older, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit older and in an entirely different part of the country. It's a really sepia-tinged image. It's of the Carnarvon Road in Snowdon. It was sent in 1950, and it was sent by a woman who I knew when I was young. She was one of two elderly sisters, keeping with the theme of crazy elderly women. my grandmother ended up looking after both of these women. And this is a postcard that one of them sent. I inherited all of her photographs and postcards after she died. And this is one of the postcards, one of the two postcards of hers that ended up in a book I wrote in which she's a character.
So this is the book Mothlight you're talking about?
Yeah, Mothlight.
Now that fictionalizes their lives? I know the characters from Mothlight, but how much of it is real and how much of it is...
A lot of it's not real because it's about ghosts and about swarms of moths and lots of other strange...
That's the bit I thought
things.
Was real.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I wish it was. she was... The thing was with Phil, as she was called, she had the most incredible collection of macabre books and a really dark sense of humour that I remember. And she lived to a very old age. And so it wasn't too much of a push to use elements of her as this character who's gradually haunting the narrator. And one of the things that I did want to do in this book was to build a narrative around all of these photographs and postcards. And the two postcards resonate in particular because in real life and in the book, they're the only two examples. There's another one. This is one of a pair that appear. The only two examples of her actually acknowledging her father. There's no other evidence we could find going through virtually everything that was left in her house in the time we went through it, that there was any acknowledgement of her father.
Right.
Except on this trip to North Wales. And I mean, even the message is quite banal. It's about the trip. She's writing it on a wall looking at the sea, and that's about it. There's something about it not just the fact that she sent it, but then after obviously her father died, she then kept it as well. So there's a really strange sort of direction to where this postcard went. It's something, not to get too academic, but it's something along the lines of Jacques Derrida when he was talking about postcards, about how their destination is not necessarily straightforward from A to B. There's many destinations on the way, and that as a philosophy opens up lots of different ways of seeing everything from history to life.
Derrida wrote a book about postcards, didn't he?
It's called The Postcard, and that's basically what he's talking about.
I must reread it.
It's it's not a page turner, let's say that, but it is interesting in regards to the postcard as an object, in that we assume that it's going to go from A to B, and it's just a message, and it's just a very antiquated analog way of interacting with someone, and things we can probably do in seconds now. But actually, when you look at it, it is going on that journey in which there will be people that potentially look at it. There'll be people who experience that as you wrote it. There'll be, as you say, we're talking about before, with the postman looking at it, there's always that opportunity, and in the sorting office, and the people around when you're reading it, and the people that come and see it on the fridge door. And that's so many different perspectives.
Yes.
And it really does charge these objects in a way which I think very few objects have. Maybe Polaroid photos also retain it, in that they are these sort of memorials to the moment, and they do have that essence of history completely charged in just essentially a piece of card or an image. And so they're very ripe for fictionalising.
And you actually show images of these cards in the book, in the story.
Definitely, yeah.
But the story takes us into different places, and the novel takes us into this world of, as you say, the haunting of the narrator.
Definitely.
By this woman's strength of her personality, I suppose.
Yeah, because she dies quite early on, and the book is very much about that grieving process taking a very strange turn and being obsessed with this woman to the point where she is haunting him. But the postcards feature in a really interesting way. The designer, Vince, has done a really amazing job where actually you can turn the page and see both sides of the postcard as if it's there. And what I wanted was that tangibility, because I think analog things like postcards, like Polaroid photographs, they have a real tangible sense of being there, which I think is being slowly lost a little bit with digital life in general. And when you put them in a book, I think it creates this real authentic spine in a book.
How did you feel about taking the words and the image of someone you knew, the postcard from this woman who you knew and presumably were fond of, and taking it off into this different, odd, scary folk horror place?
Well, I think she probably would have appreciated it. I wouldn't have done it if I didn't think, in hindsight, I mean, she's obviously not here now, but I wouldn't have done it if I didn't think she'd appreciate it. But when the postcards turn up, it's quite a banal moment. And one of the things I do like, that sort of Robert Aikman thing of making very domestic things banal things seem a bit weird, and the postcards aren't really changed or edited in that sense. They literally appear as they are, and they're explained as they are.
So you've worked the narrative around
them.
Yeah,
I haven't really distorted the reality. The reality is just part of that fictional world, and I think that's one of the central problems of fiction anyway. It's just that it's far more tangible in this book and books similar to it, because the photographs have that resonance, whereas, I mean, in books that don't use photographs, they still have that problem. There's plenty of occasions where writers use real life in those things.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just more prominent.
Vampires, a lot of them.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm doing it I think it's far more interesting to do it with that, as I say, that tangible sense of being there, of having that thing which was at some point held by those people that did make that journey, that is containing those histories. So it's definitely ripe for fiction.
Yeah. No, I think it's fascinating. I mean, obviously it created a kind of formal challenge for you to kind of work the narrative around these images and make them feel seamless and not contrived either.
Yeah, it was very difficult. It was very difficult because it was a whole life contained in a suitcase. It wasn't just a couple of photos and these postcards. It was a whole life from the 40s up till around 2008 when she died. So we've got the whole range of photographic techniques. We've got the whole range of holidays, domestic settings, personal occasions. And, you know, you could fill 10, 15 books with them, and certainly not books that go in the stranger directions that book goes in. So it was a challenge, but no, it was a rewarding one, I think.
Well, very good. Well, thank you for bringing in that card and sharing it with us and you know, with the readers of Mothlight as well. Jake.
Yeah.
The final card from you is something I know you're very fond of.
I love this. This is a very treasured possession. So this, I bought this postcard for Kim, my partner's last birthday. And on the front, a cartoon by Sompé, the French cartoonist. It's a it's one of his brilliant distillations of little... He's so good at pinpointing the minutiae of the human existence and just highlighting something you'd never thought of before. And it's a woman posing in front of a car and a palm tree and presumably her husband standing in front of her and leaning at this impossible angle to take the perfect photo.
He's contorted himself.
Yeah, and she just sort of has this pleasant smile. She's not giving very much, but he's doing everything he can to make this work. And it's such a funny dynamic. And on the other side is another cartoon by Sampei, and it's actually hand-drawn by him. And I found it online. We'd gone through this period of just obsessing over Sampei. My partner is an artist. She's called Kim Haskins, and she basically got told to paint cats about 10 years ago. So
oh, right.
She started. And now everyone's like, oh, you paint cats? And she's like, but they're very funny paintings. And I think that she sort of has a great kind of feline equivalence to some of what Sampei does in terms of getting those little moments, those looks you get from cats. My favorite picture she did is of a cat in mid-wash with, you know, when you've got the sort of the set square back legs with one sticking straight up in the air and one horizontal and the little bit of tongue poking out and just looking at you like, what?
Do you mind?
Yeah, and Kim talks about the brilliant kind of reductiveness of Sampei's cartoons. And I feel like this little hand-drawn, it's basically an autograph. It says for some names, André and Noël and somebody else, it's blurred by the water. Sampei from June 1984. And it's just a little cartoon of a man waving a hat, possibly a self-portrait.
Yes, it's a sort of greeting, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's lovely.
And I think that it's so right to be on a postcard simply because what is a postcard but this little reduction of a moment?
Just a few lines, as they say.
Exactly,
just a line.
Exactly. And that's what he does so brilliantly. It is just a few little, very shaky little lines that evoke everything. I treasure it for that.
And is he still alive?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's done a lot of New Yorker covers and stuff.
Right.
And some of his greatest work, I think, is he did the illustrations for The Adventures of Nicholas, which was republished recently.
Yes, because I don't think it was really known over here, but it's become a British thing now.
Yeah, they translated them, I think, in the 60s, right. 70s, and they had the same translators as the people who did Gosney's other work, which was Asterix.
Ah, yes.
Anthea Bell, I think.
That's right, who did recently die, I think.
Oh, really?
I believe so.
I mean, what an amazing body of work. Mm. And they had such strict rules.
Subtle, the translations.
Yeah, they said we never dropped a joke. So if there was a joke, they would find there would be equivalents. Even if they had to do it kind of down the line,
yes.
They'd never lose
Very
a joke.
Good.
And I love his work. And
well, how lovely to have that, then.
It's
an autograph.
I know.
And where does it live?
It is, well, you know what? It hasn't been framed yet. We have a 5-year-old. What are you going to do? So, but it will live, I think, probably in our studio. So we both mainly work from home and we have a little annex in the back of our garden. And it's a brilliant, messy, crazy, chaotic workshop where I have plastic trombones and banjos and, and Kim has paint spattered everywhere. And I think it will sort of sit very nicely in there.
It's a challenge, though, isn't it? Because which way around? You do it that way. Do you want to see the autograph side?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I love the cartoon on the other side, but I'm sure we can find that elsewhere.
That image is a great image. It reminds me of some of those pictures you sometimes see of Instagram influencers and their partners having to constantly
take the photos. Yes, you're right.
It has that aspect to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, you're right. It's a very early selfie.
Is he lying down because he wants to get the top of the tree in?
I think he's trying to fit the palm tree.
Yeah, it's the tree's fault, really. It would have been fine without the tree.
can we chop the tree down by about 20 feet? So,
no, yeah. I like this tree.
Yeah.
That's the point.
He's so good at... He'll some of his best pieces are these kind of huge landscapes where there'll be a kind of a huge exotic garden, perhaps at a resort and a massive swimming pool and an amazing building behind it and stuff. And he will just have in the corner a man just looking down at the floor watching a beetle. You know, it's so good that people's obliviousness to everything around them, I think, is... It's so good.
Yeah. Well, it's an honest reflection of what really goes on in people's brains, isn't it? How we actually are.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, thank you for bringing that in and sharing it with us. I'm thrilled that you both shared such odd, interesting, diverse, personal cards with us. Quick reminder for everyone listening, images of all these cards are going to be on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, including one last one from me in the past postcard style. As you'd have seen on Twitter and on the book. This is the interior of Coventry Cathedral.
Oh.
With a rather nice decal edge, as it's known.
Oh, that's nice.
Valentine's card. 1965, July.
A Valentine's card?
Oh, Valentine's is the publisher, sorry.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, it's a very romantic.
That would be, well, I mean, it could be very romantic. Yes. I mean, if you pop in the question.
Valentine's from Dundee, I know.
See you here Saturday at 2.
And, well, this is an odd one. You'll have to tell me what you think. So it's quite sort of a factual message going through here. I hope you saw the liver and sausage in the parcel with the dog's meat. Now, it doesn't take a comic writer to realise the potential for misunderstandings there.
Yeah. That's an Alan Ayckbourn play in waiting, isn't it?
Especially if this took a while to arrive.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for the sausages.
Yeah, cut to the vicar mid-mouth and saying, this is delicious.
Well, before we let Adam and Jake back out into the overcast London streets, I've got one more postcard for you both. It's customary for us to end with something a bit like this. So, actually, you're both musicians, I think.
Yeah, I own instruments, so I don't know about it. Wow!
You may have seen something like this, I'm not sure.
No, I've never seen anything like that. It's a flexi disc on a record, or a record on a postcard.
Can you describe what we're seeing, then?
So, it's a gondolier.
It's Venice, I assume.
Is that Venice? There must be Venice. Where else would that be? And beautiful, luridly coloured. And so, my question is... It's a large format postcard. It's like twice the size of a standard postcard.
Yeah, at least twice, I think.
And it's got a number of translations, but the English one says, the singing postcard, use it as a normal record.
Okay. Well, Tom next door has been paying some attention, I think. If we ask him nicely, he might be able to do something with it. Said on the back that you can play it 100 times perfectly. I think this is probably
101.
101, definitely.
You should bring these back.
Yeah.
Well, I always say exactly the same thing. Not bad for a piece of cardboard.
Yeah.
Perfect sound forever. Does it take you to Venice?
Oh, and back.
To Catford.
Yeah, directly. I mean, what's amazing is sort of trying to imagine what era is this from?
I think early 60s.
Early 60s, when there wasn't anything. You know, there was no internet. There was like one television. And so it is feasible that someone would turn and say, oh, Arthur, put on the postcard. But, you know, this could be someone's leisure time.
Yeah.
Maybe even notching off, you know, well, coming up to 100, you know, maybe just special occasions now.
Yes. No, we can't. Not to my birthday.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, as the gondoliers spin forever at 78 RPM, that's it for this time on Postcard from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first class guests for sharing the postcards from their past, Adam Scoville and Jake Yap. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me at Past Postcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardorstudios.co.uk.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.